You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Around the NFL Podcast is the best sports podcast in our hearts.
That's it. From the Chris Wessling Podcast Studio, it's Around the NFL. Dan Hans is here with heroes Greg Rosenthal, Mark Sessler. Walking on my way into the studio, TV screens everywhere. Less now after the storms took out half of the electronics in our building a couple of months ago. But walk by a screen, and then they had the draft scroll, with the various mock drafts from our experts. In fact, we have an expert coming in later today in studio. Tease. Saw the Jets logo. And now the Jets on Monday announced they have gone back. And it's interesting, to when you start to get old, and
hasn't happened for me yet, but yeah.
And you realize that everything just repeats. So anyway, it started, their logo is the Namath logo that everybody remembers. Then in the 70s and 80s, they had the blocky Jets font that we remember so well, Mark, with the jet on top.
Sure.
Then in 90, when Parcells got there in 97, 98, they went back to Namath. Then they went to some type of bizarre hybrid during the Gase. I call it the Gase. And now they're back to the 70s and 80s jet with the, so that's what I saw on the scroll. And I was like, that was cool. And then yesterday I also saw the Jaguars are celebrating their 30th anniversary.
Wow.
Which is, that will age a man. And they will be wearing throwbacks from 30 years ago. And I saw just before we started, Mark, you're mentioning.
Yeah. Well, the Cleveland Browns, remember the Browns had the horrible uniforms and they had to wait 5 years to get out of them, like during our...
Cleveland was like,
yeah,
plastered all over it.
Absurd.
Like, we get it. You're from the land.
All these other teams seem to be able to change whatever they want like every couple of years. But Cleveland made a couple little tweaks and they went back to their white face masks, which they had from 75 through 95, right before they moved. So one of their best eras in the 80s there, especially early 90s with Belichick. Then again, though, in 99 through 2005, which was a disaster, but... I think
we don't talk about those years.
No, the white face masks literally look better. I think they're going to maybe adopt like the thinner stripes. And there's little tweaks that they're bringing up, making it even more old.
But we're out of ideas, Greggy.
Like, yeah.
When's the last? So the Brown, that's a throwback to the Jets I just talked about. When's the last time a team redid their uniforms and it was a completely fresh uniform and it was like, oh, that's cool? Or are we just now? We're just
probably
going back
answers,
to the 70s and 80s.
But you're right, none are.
Like, I remember when the Bucks rebranded in the late 90s, it was like, oh my god, they just totally, everything feels different now. And sure enough, it was under Dungy. Well, let's think about that. Maybe we're missing one. ATP behind the glass, big funk. Maybe you guys,
that's
one.
Fashion, that's life, that's even art has these like different cycles. But yes, I always remember when we were growing up watching like the old NBA clips of how short Robert Parrish's shorts were in the NBA and Larry Bird at that time, thinking like, well, that's a ridiculous thing that will never happen again.
Football
and it's back.
Is completely different.
You watch
basketball.
Tennis right now, like the shorts are actually shorter than right. The basketball shorts from the 80s, and it's coming for all of us. It's summer of thigh.
And
thigh
season. We love that trend.
Thigh
all three
meat.
Of us. All three of us yeah. equally love that trend.
I recently rewatched the 30 for 30 Fab Five, and that was a big part of their statement that they were different. It was like, I'm going to wear clown shorts,
right.
And everyone else is wearing the Spankies.
Shout out to the Jaguars fans. You mentioning that it's the 30th anniversary. I know you guys don't want to hear us. Oh, the Browns and Jets, we've had it so hard. Like, sneaky, a lot of heartbreak now. They're still one of the only teams that have never made the Super Bowl. They're 30 years old. That takes up the vast majority of our lives here. in a weird run that they've had, because they were one of the best teams in the NFL for their first five seasons and been mostly stuck in mediocrity or below.
Just
since.
As an asterisk, I would note that the Browns are one of the other few teams that have been around for 200 years.
I get it.
Years,
I just mean in terms of living humans at this point, you're a 35-year-old with the Jags. You're a 40-year-old. It's been a lot of losing.
And don't forget, Greg, you especially, although you conveniently have moved this out of your brain, Miles Jack wasn't down. I was going to say, was there like a heartbreak moment for the Jaguars?
Well, sure. Yes. They made three conference championships. You didn't win one of them.
Right. But when you basically have clinched a conference championship win, and the officials and perhaps the league conspire to ensure the Jaguars don't get to go to the Super Bowl, so the Patriots can go to their 14th Super Bowl, as happened without any
doubt. That's exactly what happened.
And so, Jags fans out there, it is the greatest what if in Jags history. Miles Jack wasn't down. 2017 AFC Championship. Do you remember that play?
Of course I remember that play. And
because
he
wasn't
down.
They
had the Patriots on the ropes. That defense was special. I don't think they would have won the Super Bowl that year anyways, but that defense was special. And the second time they lost to the Patriots in the conference championship, because Drew Bledsoe took care of them way back in 1996. Mm. Probably their biggest heartbreak moment was the year they were the one seed, and they were, I think, were 16-2 or something, and their division rivals, the Titans, came in there and they stomped them. And I think the Jags were decent-sized favorites in that game. And
Greg,
they absolutely
see, I knew
stomped
you were
going
to do this. What, are you talking about the Jaguars' greatest heartbreak?
Yeah.
Greg, 20-10.
I'm just saying that was their best team.
20-10.
They were a one seed.
Jaguars over Patriots, 13:37 to go in the fourth quarter in Foxborough. Jack picks up a loose ball. He's going into the end zone to make it 27-10 with 13.5 minutes to play. Instead, they wave it off, and then the Patriots go on to win.
No, they didn't want the Jaguars.
It's hard to beat that.
Here's the upset.
You know what you shouldn't have done is blow a 2-score lead there in the fourth quarter.
One upset to get to the AFC title game, that Jaguars team.
Scored some points.
The play caller for the Jaguars, Nathaniel Hackett.
There he is.
I don't know what he's unlearned since, but he had quite a nice run with the Jaguars.
Hi, my name's Nathaniel Hackett.
I think he actually, that really helped his career, because he was able to say that, well, I made something out of Blake Bortles.
Every now and then,
Green Bay 2 seasons later.
Every now and then, I feel like, oh, we're underserving certain fan bases. Some teams get talked about more than others. We just gave a great look back on the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Right, we lost most of our listeners, but that's okay.
No, it's a fascinating.
Here was a heartbreaking, crescendoing, rough moment for you Jaguars fans. Let's spend 12 minutes on it.
Another underserved fan base, because of this guy to my left, the New York Giants. We're gonna dive deep a little bit on them.
That is the most. Our listeners, please tell us if you would disagree with that.
Or tell us if you agree.
Yeah, because I think if you just did a word cloud of all the teams that we've talked about in the history of this podcast, and even in the last 5 years, Giants are easily top 10.
I would go top six.
Yeah, but you're typically...
Because you guys love the Giants.
But you're shading negative on them is, I think, where Dan's going.
Okay.
Most of said word cloud is Greg trying to assassinate the franchise's character or disregard them or disparage them or discredit them. As journalists, needing to tell the other side of the story.
Balance.
This is a major pivot point in the current structure of Giants history. So we might need a certain segment to help us out. Unpack it all with a special guest. And I did mention a special guest coming up. He is a draft expert. He has been with this company for many years. He is a good guy.
All around.
Chad Reuter.
Yeah.
Joining us, breaking down his last mock draft. But before that, some news.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I also want to thank God, man.
I'm very happy for Travis Kelce, and he's currently dating the most famous woman in the world. She's a beautiful, talented woman, and he's a major star as a result. In fact, he's about to host a new show on Amazon Prime, Are You Smarter Than a Celebrity? Which is kind of funny because some of his old tweets, but that's separate.
I think that's what makes him a good choice, yeah.
But I do love me some pre-Taylor Travis. And that was from the AFC title game a previous season against the Bengals when nobody, the Chiefs could never beat a Joe Burrow team. Well, they did in that game. I'm looking forward to Joe Burrow being back on the scene this year.
If you want
to
talk your shit, talk your shit, pimp.
See, that's pre-Taylor. Travis, he's got a little bit more of that, the white boy flow, and he's, you know.
Well, and when they say that we are the people's podcast in their hearts, like, we literally lost a contest for best sports podcast to Kelsey's podcast. So, but we're able to still see him as it fair and balanced.
An honor to be nominated, Mark.
Just an honor.
Well, true.
Just an honor. All right, let's start with a little bit of draft intrigue because the Washington Commanders, picking number two in the draft, have obviously interest in a quarterback, and the Commanders are doing everything they can to be ready for next Thursday's big decision. And on Wednesday, they welcomed in LSU quarterback Jaden Daniels, North Carolina quarterback Drake May, Michigan quarterback J.J. McCarthy, Washington quarterback Michael Penix, all visiting the facility tonight and tomorrow. So this was last night and today, according to Burt Breer. So that's called due diligence. That feels also a little bit, that feels a little much to pack them in all like that, but who knows how these schedules work. The Commanders, if you ever wanted to wager something, because I know that's something people do now, the Commanders taking a quarterback at number two is off the board. Like, you couldn't, I don't think you could even do that if you wanted to, because it's so obvious it's going to happen. It's just, who's it going to be?
It's going to be Jaden Daniels, according to the betting markets that you mentioned, and according to Adam Schefter, who does this thing every draft season, I've noticed, where he kind of tells you what the picks are going to be, but he doesn't report them. But he'll do something like go on a Commanders fan podcast this week or last and say, like, yeah, I think you can pretty much order your Daniels jerseys. And it's like, huh, that's interesting. And you look at what he's tweeted out, and he couches it all as if, like, you're not allowed to report this, but you kind of know it. And then he ends up getting it right, I found, with these high-level ones. And
you said, Burt?
Adam Schefter.
Oh, Schefter, yeah.
And he's been on the Daniels front. So that's part of the reason why I wanted to bring this up was, to me, that is significant, that he's become kind of the heavy favorite to go to Washington, which, you know, as a Patriots fan, I'm thrilled about, because I'd love to get Drake May in the third spot. But I also just imagine, what is it like in the facility when all these four quarterbacks are there? Are they there at the same time? I don't really know. Are they all going out to dinner at the same time? That is usually how it goes. That is a, I would love to have a camera on that and just see the dynamic.
I would
there.
Too, because outside of the Schefter nugget there, like, Washington's done a nice job of not playing their hand here. And I feel like this is kind of like the next version of that, like, hey, we're bringing them all in. But
even Penix, who, like, in theory, they would have to trade back, you would think, if they took him.
Right. If it is Daniels, then the only thing this does for me that's intriguing is, like, if Daniels is more unlikable or less impressive with the other three guys, and, like, someone could somehow supersede him. I don't think that's going to happen. But I find it weird to have all four. Like, would you want to pick a life partner or a spouse and have four people in the same room competing for it? Maybe.
Like a reality show.
But maybe. But I think that's sort of like fugazi on some level. Like, also with quarterbacks, don't you want to take them into a room isolated and, like, show us how you do this and that? You know, like, really learn who they are? Or is it like groupthink and dinners? We'll see.
I like that we're not even... Caleb doesn't even have to go down there.
Well, that...
And that's thankful. I mean, he could probably get a free dinner out of it if he wanted to. But even the Commanders are like, we're, you know...
Could have declined
it, too. We understand
it,
what's happening there. In other news, by the way, mentioned Patrick Mahomes. He has had, obviously, an all-time start to his career. He's won three Super Bowls. He's won three Super Bowl MVPs for each of those games. He's won two NFL MVPs. He is only 28 years old. And that has led to a lot of talk. Everybody wants to talk all the time about who's the GOAT. And it was Joe Montana, and then it was maybe Peyton Manning, and then Tom Brady. And based on success and statistically also, I mean, I still have to say it's Tom Brady. But Patrick Mahomes' start is all-time. And he has a good perspective on it. Here's a quote, because he was named one of the world's most influential people of 2024 by Time Magazine, which is still hanging in there. Time, still a thing.
The only time I hear about it is when it's the Time Top 100. They have a little party. Inevitably, it's someone in sports or someone I follow on Twitter, and they're at the top, the Time 100 party. So they got enough juice that they get them to show up to the party.
My senior year of college, as a big U2 fan who was obsessed, especially at that age, Bono was on the cover of, like, the May 2002 issue, and it's like a big picture with a big serious Bono face with the glasses, holding up on a leather jacket with the American flag inside, and then the headline is, Can Bono save the world? And I was like, okay, I'm putting on the door of my dorm for the rest of my
Well, the answer was no.
He did, actually.
Save the world.
That's why you're still here. So.
All right. Well, that is news to me. You're breaking that news. I feel like we're in decline on some level, but
we're here.
He did his best. Anyway, so here's what he had to say. I've had at least one of the top three starts to a career. I'll put it that way.
I love that perspective.
It is, but it's also, that's a little humble because he's had the best start. I don't know how can, when you factor in not just team success, but also individual success, I don't think anyone touches him.
I just appreciate that he is framing it in a way that is more intelligent to me than how all the sports talk yakkers are talking about it. Because you can only compare, okay, what's he done his first 6 years? It's stupid to compare him to people who've had an entire career. It's just unfair and it's stupid. But he's saying I've had one of the top three starts and he's done the homework. He mentioned specifically Brady, who individually just wasn't close to that level. But I get it. He had two Super Bowl MVPs and three titles. So I think that's why Mahomes is thinking just hate titles. Montana, who had a very strong start to his career, an MVP in there, has a title in there and some MVP votes. And he throws in Marino. And Marino, to me, is the only one that you could say would be close to the same level individually because you look at him and he was either the MVP or AP first team quarterback his first 4 years. So he was in terms of just ranking your quarterbacks, and I think Mahomes has always been in the top five, usually the top three, often the top one, like, and he's been that throughout. The only one that could even compare would maybe be Marino. And the, you know the other one that popped in my mind? And I went to check the AP votes.
Sam Darnold.
Joe Namath. Because really, Joe Namath
close.
Basically didn't have a good career.
Right church, wrong pew.
After his first 5 years. But in the first 5 years of his career, he was one of, if not the best quarterback in the league for about 5 years.
I'd push back on Montana. He didn't cross 20 touchdowns until his fifth season. I know it's a different time, but
sure,
he didn't. He was only 18 and 15 over his first four seasons. He barely played over his first two seasons. And then year three came and he won the Super Bowl and all that business.
But top five MVP twice in his first six seasons. But you're right. It's not like Mahomes.
I mean, I think Mahomes is, but he's correct to point back in history. And like Marino was an outlier.
He's looking at it all.
No, I like that. And Marino's the first one I thought of that would be a little off the beaten path. He hit the ground running as a super duper star and went to the Super Bowl in his second season when he won MVP, and he never got over the hump.
Sounds like it's harder to do like what the Chiefs and Mahomes have done in this era than back when three or four teams dominated the NFL for like long stretches of time.
Right. Marino, it is crazy, man. He led the league in yards four out of his first 6 years. Had that great first season where he's, but he didn't start the whole season, where he was third in MVP in a season. He didn't start the whole season. Then he won MVP. Then he was the first team All-Pro, and then he was third in MVP. That is just crazy. And
he is,
shout out to the Dolphins fans who always stick up for him because that is
it. How about that? And you heard me giving him love, too. By the way, throwing for 5,000 yards and nearly 50 touchdowns in 1984
total outlier
is absolutely insane. I'd love to see who the difference between first and second place that year. Marino of the mid-80s, and you're not going to like this in some of your people, Greg. He's what you wanted Justin Herbert to be in his first 4 years, but he hasn't quite gotten there. Like, oh, he's that special. He's that guy. He's not that guy. That's that guy.
No one.
He's that guy.
I would never put him in that category.
Yeah, but I think
the way the talk around Herbert
was. I don't think that Herbert chatter is as loud right now as it was even last offseason.
I mean, I would have
different.
I would have liked that. I mean, he hasn't even been close to Mahomes. No one has. But yeah, it's not even a comp.
All right. In other news, here's a guy who used to be talked about as a top quarterback, but not so much in recent seasons. Deshaun Watson, who is entering his third season with the Browns?
Went yes.
Suspended the first one, right?
Been there 2 years.
2 years, okay.
I mean, vaguely.
He's coming off a season-ending right shoulder injury that was very serious. He underwent surgery in November to repair what was a displaced fracture to the glenoid in his throwing shoulder. His throwing program is moving along. He said Tuesday that everything is in full motion. Everything is fluid and motion is really good. The velocity and the strength are really good. So everything progressing, although it's not sure, Mark, yet whether he'll be cleared for OTAs. So physically, he's not all there. Still absolutely blows my mind that it's not Joe Flacco who's there to fill in if this needs to take a little longer. It would be Jameis Winston, but Watson is on track, it seems, for 2024.
There's just intense pressure on this working out, and we're 2+ years into it. And taking a look at his QBR from 22 and 23, 40.4 and 42.9, which are a full 20 points lower than any other season he played in the league. He's not been the same player. Durability has been an issue too. It's like, if you're going to go make the trade for someone that you did for Deshaun Watson, you want to know he's going to be there present nonstop. He wasn't present the first year for off the field antics. And he wasn't present last year because his body didn't hold up. And in year three, if you don't get a glowing version of this quarterback, like, it already is the worst quarterback trade that we can think of in the past of this century. And it has a chance to become a full-bloom disaster. And it's crazy for me to think that Kevin Stefanski, who has won 2 Coach of the Year awards, which is atypical for a coach that's barely won a playoff game. Like,
he was actually in his basement when they won that.
Yes. I mean, he's done a good job, especially when Watson's not been in there. He's done a good job coaching. In fact, better, I think. But the pressure on him and Andrew Berry and everyone else is immense because the quarterback's not going anywhere because of the money attached to him.
Maybe this makes you feel better. Out of nowhere, I had a vision yesterday that Watson, I assume within this vision, although it didn't go into this realm, Watson gets hurt again, that the Browns pick up the phone and they call the Colts, who are happy with Anthony Richardson's progress and he's healthy, and they go and they get him back.
Get Flacco.
So all of a sudden you got the Joker Winston in there, but now let's get an adult in here, Flacco, while Watson idles away his time back in IR.
Like, if that happened in week 12, could Flacco win comeback player of the year again?
I would love it. It would be amazing. Can we cut this for when this inevitably happens in October, late October, right around Halloween?
If Winston comes in there and outplays him, that'll be like the seventh different Stefanski quarterback that's done that.
Let's just see how many can do it at this point.
What the most newsworthy thing?
How do you feel about it? Tell me how you feel about it.
I'd love to see it. I think it'd be a fun fit with Stefanski. Yeah. Watson.
You'll have fun. You won't win a lot of games, but it'll be
Stefanski,
fun.
Watson. You know, he might not be fully ready until training camp. Wasn't worried about that. He did kind of, you know, thing that annoyed me a little bit. He mentions like, hey, I might have actually hurt my shoulder in week 3. And so he was kind of throwing out these. And he did hurt his shoulder in week 3, but he might have had the injury that ended up requiring surgery, he said, in week 3. And he was playing through it. So kind of throwing that out there, which I didn't love. But one of the reasons I put this on there is I learned last week, and I meant to mention it here, that Deshaun Watson has a podcast, and Kevin Stefanski was a guest of this podcast.
I saw this, yeah.
And I was like, wait, what?
What is Deshaun Watson talking about on his podcast?
Okay.
Like, I would love to know.
I should go listen.
Is it a tech podcast?
Probably no, it's called QB Unplugged. They've got some major issues. I went and checked their feed, and it's very inconsistent, but it says there's been quite a number of episodes, I think 13 episodes. Except it just, in the podcast feed, it skips from episode 7 to 13 with no mention, but many months in between. And the Stefanski one, which is up on YouTube, is not in that feed. Because I was curious. I actually was thinking, hey, maybe I'll listen to a Stefanski-Watson podcast. But it's not in the feed. So they've got some tech issues.
Are you sure that, like, his whole life skipped about, like, 5 years?
No.
Well, they're unplugged. Yeah. So
They were during the season last year. So I guess I'm just saying, the podcast seems to be going as well as the career in with the Browns so far.
There are many podcasts featuring current and former NFL players that are worth your while. But when you hear things like Deshaun Watson has a podcast, we have saturated the market, players. Let's start. You know, the union maybe should get involved and be like, hey guys, we're not letting you all do podcasts.
Right.
Because it's annoying to everyone. We're gonna knock it down. Going forward, there are only 70 player podcasts, and we will let you know if you're on that list.
I mean,
seems fair.
It's countercultural to produce a podcast that's not available. Like, I think that's next level.
I guess it's on YouTube, so maybe it's more that. I don't know.
All right, let's take a break, and we'll now drill in when we come back on one of the teams that are at the center of next Thursday's round one.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we push against typical societal norms. We embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful, providing a space for raw, unfiltered conversations that celebrate vulnerability and allow you to tune in to share, connect, and find comfort together.
Our tears come as a way to let us release what we can't hold anymore.
I trust that no one's ever going to find out those deepest, darkest secrets. Yeah,
it's been a hard day. She walks out, and this is what she looks like.
Oh my gosh, give her an Oscar.
Listen to A Really Good Cry with me, Radhi Devlukia, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Flashpoint. Oh my goodness. ATN After Dark. This is the one of the most important segments in the show's history, because it is a segment that, first of all, is a phenomenon. I mean, people go nuts about it, but it's also what separates us from the pack, because we see things, we see storylines, we see the future of the league in the way that very few people can. And Mark and I are the founders and co-creators. Greg, you've come on and really made a lot of advances. What's Greg's role with the?
I was a production assistant to some degree, but I will say our most recent one.
Introduced like the last, you know, two or three guests.
Well, I'd say one, but yes, you had a Trench and Eagles episode that I think in the eyes of the listener raised Greg's status within this world.
Right.
Well, he doesn't have to work on the other outside of this.
The key is we have like a Patriots like humble nature to us, not trying to take
who's
credit.
We?
Presumptive there. All right. Anyway, hit it again. Hit it again, because we now welcome in our guest, and I'm sorry that he had to listen to that internal conversation and bickering, and he's probably thinking, what the hell are they talking about? That doesn't matter. This is the beat man for the record. He is a voice that has covered this team, the New York Giants, that we're about to talk about since 2011. This is Art Stapleton. Welcome to Around the NFL.
What's up, fellas? Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Great to have you, Art. And by the way, I want to say it's good to have Art. Where are you from originally?
North Jersey, born and raised, and live in New York now. But, you know, New York, New Jersey.
Bergen
County guy.
So I grew up in Rockland County, and I would drive from Pearl River over the border to Montvail to get cheaper gas. And I just want to say, like, I was listening to your podcast, Art, getting ready for this segment today, the All In podcast. And all in with Art Stapleton. Got to get the name in there. I like that. And it's just like, oh, it's nice to hear someone that it sounds like me. I like someone that says Kara got married. It's good to have a North Jersey, tri-state area guy.
That reportedly,
Art, thank you.
Reportedly came from a coal town. Dan has told us I grew up about 20 miles from Dan, but he grew up in a coal town, according to his own reporting.
Yeah, I think everyone knows Pearl River is a coal town, Art, right?
Yeah, well, you know, Pearl River, now we know it as, you know, just another town that's near the Palisades Mall. That's like my town, Rochelle Park, is right near Paramus, and we live near the Garden State Plaza. I mean, that's our area, really all you're about.
Yeah, in the summer of 2000, many memories of the TGI Fridays where I was a server went by Danny. All right, Art, enough. Let's focus. I apologize. This Flashpoint Focus series is all about getting ahead of the story, and the Giants are a fascinating study here because they have the 6th pick. And let's start where we got to start, at the quarterback. All right. Like, so you would say that John Mara and ownership is not going to stand in the way if this team has a quarterback that they love with Daniel Jones. Put the odds on it. Percentage chance they end up coming out of round one with a quarterback in your mind.
Well, if they were sitting at three, I'd say 98.99999%, but they're not. So a lot of their quarterback quest, I think, is going to be dependent on what the teams ahead of them do in that situation. And if New England, Arizona, or the Chargers want to move, I think they'll look to move. You know, John Mara told a story at the owners' meetings, and I'll try to keep it as concise as possible, but was just the idea back in 2004 when his father, Wellington, had to be convinced that it was time to move on from Kerry Collins and draft a quarterback and make a trade up. And Ernie Accorsi, the general manager at the time, and Tom Coughlin, the first year head coach at the time, loved Eli Manning and they wanted to make a trade up. And John Mara recalled having to convince his dad, look, we know you love Kerry Collins, but we have to make a move. And they ended up making that trade. They let Kerry Collins go. Kurt Warner came in, and we all know NFL and Giants history, what happened, you know, that season. And Kurt ended up getting benched with a winning team. But I think John Mara is kind of in the position of his father from that year. And he needs to be convinced that, you know, the guy he loves, Daniel Jones, the guy he said a couple of years ago that, you know, they've done everything to screw him up. Well, it gets to a point where as badly as a guy may have been screwed up, you just have to move on. And that's where the Giants are right now.
To follow up on that, who do you think, like, in terms of pie of is making these decisions, is really calling the shots? Because to me, it's an awkward situation. Joe Shane didn't draft Daniel Jones. And how desperate do you think Joe Shane is, that their GM and Brian Daboll is obviously involved and offensive coach? And how much does the Jones negotiation last year play into it? Because I look at it and it's not like they have extra draft picks or anything. And it's not like they have a roster that has a lot of talent at every position. They have a lot of needs. Like, how much do you think Joe Shane, and if he's making the decision, is willing to give up future resources for a team that has a lot of holes?
It's a great point, Greg. And I just think that from Shane's perspective, and one thing, you know, that I've gotten to learn and I'm still getting to learn. I mean, we've been through general managers and coaches here covering the Giants. I feel like I'm on my 17th head coach and 15th right. general manager, but Shane believes in the process. You know, he believes that, you know, if he gets his process right, he'll deal with the results. Now, the results have been hot and cold since he's gotten here going into year three. But that contract, I don't believe that contract or Daniel Jones's extension was forced on Joe Shane. I think, you know, he made the call as well. You know, so he has to own the idea that if it's time to move on from Daniel Jones, he just made a different decision last year. But the reality is that they did structure the contract. Now, they're not out clean next year with Jones, but they certainly have an out to the point where I think it's $22 million in dead money. You know, we can talk about the cap and whether it's valid. I think this is Jones. This is a call for Shane to make. And they know what [S2] Right. [S1] It was like to be up in Buffalo. And they know they're in the top 10, and if they're in the top 10 next year and the year after, they might be looking for jobs. And I'm not saying that he's going to make a pick based on keeping his job, but he's got to make a call now if what they believe is a great quarterback class, if they have an opportunity to get one of their guys, they've got to pull the trigger and then see what happens after that.
And, you know, I mean, from where we stand now, next year's QB class is, you know, considered lesser by a bunch. And if you're Brian Daboll and Shane, it's like, will you even be here next draft season if you falter this year and things go south? I looked at your mock, and it was an interesting one because you got all the wide receivers going up top. Like, the Cardinals stay home, take Neighbors. The Chargers take Odunze. Then the Giants at six take Drake May. And that would be a surprise if all that occurred, I think, because I keep thinking one of these teams is going to trade down. But let's say it was a chance to take one of the big wideouts or JJ McCarthy. Like, do you think the Giants are cool with the top four? I'd say the second through fourth quarterback, whoever it is, or is it like one of the they want to see one of them particularly fall down? Do you have information on like who they think fits their system the most?
Which guy currently in Washington right now with the Commanders do they like the most?
Well, I think, you know, Mark, it's a great point. I mean, it's all a guessing game, right? I mean, we're trying to be educated. You try to make calls. You try to know what teams are thinking. I think Shane has done a great job of keeping everybody guessing. You know, they're 30 visits. They've brought in May and McCarthy, and they had workouts with those guys. And then they brought in Daniels, and they were on campus with Penix. And, you know, they even had Caleb back at the combine. When, you know, just, you know, maybe there was that 1% that he wasn't going to Chicago. They've had all the wide receivers in. I think the McCarthy thing is, you know, it's about traits, right? It's about what you can't see. It's about a leap of faith that everyone's saying, you know, some coaches will see, I can turn this guy into something special.
That sounds Mac Jonesy, by the way.
No, that sounds Daniel Jonesy. I mean, because that was a guy who was not like a consensus second quarterback in that class, but they thought they could see something others didn't.
It's true. You know what? But, I would say that you trust Pat Shurmur. Pat Shurmur got 1 year out of Daniel Jones. It turns out to be, you know, Daniel Jones's high point, really set up his rest of his career with the Giants until that playoff run. But look, the cornerstone of this front office, the two guys are Shane and Dable, come from Buffalo, and they went through, they lived the Josh Allen experience. And it's a lot easier now to look at it and say, oh, well, he was their guy. He was their guy, but it wasn't the popular guy. Mm-hmm. And I really think that they trust Dable and to an extent Kafka and Shea Tierney, who's gotten a bump now as the quarterback's coach, that they can bring in a guy. Look what they did with Tommy DeVito last year. If we get a guy in that we believe in, we could turn him up and turn a JJ McCarthy or Drake May into the best quarterback in this draft. I don't know if they can, but I think that that's kind of some of the insight that I've gotten from the Giants, and that, you know, just because we think JJ McCarthy has the potential of being the number two guy in this class is not going to shy. We're not going to shy away from taking him.
And, you know, coincidentally this morning, again, it speaks to, and Art, apologies, the forward thinking nature of this segment, Flashpoint Focus.
Naturally.
That NFL Network was airing Super Bowl 46 this morning. Between the Giants and Patriots. Oh, 2nd and 11, Welker. You got to pull it in, bro. 4 minutes to play, Greggy. One timeout for the Giants, and Pat's up two. They're bleeding that clock down. There's going to be a minute left on the clock, and Pat's up five at the very least.
And as
he makes that catch.
As Giselle said, you know, my ex-husband at this point, like, can't throw the ball
and catch it.
I think the take that I've said the most on this podcast that you've just said you don't believe me for some reason is that that's easily the most painful loss in Patriots history, easily outweighs the 07.
The other
time—that's a whole other.
The other time,
that's a whole
Eli.
Other conversation.
But we digress.
Yes, and then the turkey shot to beat all turkey shots from Eli to Manningham. Let's pause real quick. We'll be right back with Art Stapleton on the Giants.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we push against typical societal norms. We embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful, providing a space for raw, unfiltered conversations that celebrate vulnerability and allow you to tune in to share, connect, and find comfort together.
Our tears come as a way to let us release what we can't hold anymore.
And I trust that no one's ever going to find out those deepest, darkest secrets.
Yeah, it's been a hard day. She walks out, and this is what she looks like.
Oh my gosh, give her an Oscar!
Listen to A Really Good Cry with me, Radhi Devlukia, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back. Can we fly up Art's tweet this morning? This is the type of production we have here, Art. You thought of something, you fly it up, and then we have it. Art Stapleton, holy hell, this is going to be the craziest New York Giants draft on days one and two that I think I will have covered on the beat. The mood swings will be epic.
Good engagement with this tweet. Yeah. A lot of pop.
Yeah. Art's respected. He goes back a long way. The team and the fan base trust him. And I want to ask a question. Mood swings. That's a good way to get into it because, listen, as a Jets fan, Art, like I struggle with the knowledge that the Giants are a Tiffany franchise and they're led by ownership that you can trust, that know how to handle situations overall. However, I think it's fair to say that since the turkey shot to Manningham and Ahmad Bradshaw falling into the end zone and then 4 days later coming out to Culver City and me interviewing him and it being very clear that Ahmad Bradshaw had not slept or stopped partying since that game, I digress once more. But since then, there's been a lot of nothing. And I know the way Daniel Jones closed 2 years ago and then they beat a bad Vikings team in the playoffs and all that, that kind of satiated the fan base a little bit. But ownership, like where is the patience level? Where do you get in terms of internally where the Giants are? Because it has been now a pretty cold period, especially for a team that's really had a fair amount of success in the past 30, 40 years.
Well, I think, you know, the impatience really went through the last three head coaching regimes. I mean, this is the fourth head coach since Tom Coughlin left the franchise in 2015. You know, it wasn't that long ago, right? I mean, it seems like it, but, you know, I just think that ownership believes in this front office. I really do think that. And I do think that the Giants want to get back to the point where they're not changing everything every 2-3 years. You know, that being said, it does come down to the results. And if they completely flop again this year, and, you know, we saw all this talk a couple months ago, the idea of what if Bill Belichick is on the market? Would the Giants blow out this regime and bring Bill back home? Right now, I think it's ridiculous, but I've seen ridiculous covering this team since 2015. So, you know, look, there's pressure. What level of pressure? I don't think the ownership is looking to get guys out of here. I think John Mara believes in Joe Shane. He likes Joe Shane, the general manager, being the front man of his organization. I think they like Brian Daboll. I think they don't believe that last year the team quit on him. You know, ultimately it matters when you move down the line. I mean, guys don't get into Canton because their teams didn't quit on them. They get into Canton because they won. And I think that's kind of where they're at. So the hot seat, the seats are as hot as what they make them. And this year, I don't believe ownership is looking to make changes at the end of the season. But they weren't looking to get rid of Joe Judge 3 days before the end of the Joe Judge season. But because they had to look for a general manager, the way Judge became toxic in a sense, they had to get rid of him. You know, I don't believe they went into 2017 looking to get rid of Ben McAdoo, but the team imploded. He lost the locker room, and they had no choice but to blow everybody out. So we'll see. But I think ownership is confident that Shane's history and what he's shown to this point and how he'll grow as a front office executive will turn this team in the right direction. How quickly that happens, we'll just have to wait and see.
When do you think the last time that John Mara and Bill Belichick spoke on the phone, when did that occur?
And also, like you said, you right now see it as ridiculous. I'm curious, like, why you see it that way?
What, Belichick is ridiculous?
Belichick returning. The idea of it.
I think the idea that everybody watched him in New England and saw how that went downhill. I mean, you know, what would Bill be willing to do? Would Bill be willing to come in and, you know, work with Joe Shane in a front office, or would he have to pick his handpicked guy, or would Bill want to be the GM and be the head coach because that failed? Or would Bill just want to coach the team? There's different levels of a return of Bill Belichick. As far as the phone calls from John Mara and Bill Belichick, I'm guessing they kind of laid low after the whole Brian Flores, Brian Daboll, wrong Brian text exchange from Bill Belichick to Brian Flores. But I could tell you, look, Belichick's heart, there will always be a piece of his heart with the Giants, and there will always be a piece of the Giants with Bill Belichick. I don't believe that going into, you know, the draft, that John Mara is sitting there saying, you know what, if this fails, I'm bringing Bill back. But in a couple months if things really don't go the way they expected it to go and Bill places a call with his intermediaries, I can't tell you that that's not going to happen. We're talking about the greatest coach in NFL history, and there's a piece of that, I think, that the Giants would appeal to ownership. But not many people other than John Mara are in that organization left from when Belichick was the defensive coordinator with Parcells as well. You know, Belichick is as much the guy who lost the two Lombardis that are sitting in the lobby of the facility than he is the defensive coordinator that helped deliver the first two Lombardis. So that's kind of the where the Giants are. It really does come down to John Mara and Steve Tisch to an extent, who is the co-owner. He has a relationship with Bill Belichick as well.
Yeah, there was a reporting on ESPN. We might hit this a little more tomorrow about Belichick, but that, yeah, he kind of had an eye on all these NFC East teams, essentially the Giants, Eagles, Washington that next year, and that he was willing in Atlanta to not be in charge of personnel, which was an interesting nugget. If that was true, he's willing to work with their GM, and he still didn't get that job here. Last one for me, at least, Art, is just like if there are a lot of different scenarios. Just they have so many needs. Do you think if there's two good, like, number one wide receivers available at six and the top three quarterbacks are gone, and I'm including May, who, to me, you know, is the most Josh Allen-like and maybe has the highest ceiling other than Caleb Williams. Say they're all gone. You know, when you look at this roster and what they think their needs are, like, how do you think they'll evaluate, you know, having to, like, can they feel like they leave this draft, I guess, is my larger question, without a quarterback, if they just don't think the value is there at six versus like forcing it, like you could argue they did with Jones at the same position 5 years ago.
I completely get the sentiment, and I agree with you. You can't just look at this draft and say we have six picks, we have to get a quarterback with one of them. I mean, what does that mean? You know, you've got coaches who here, you know, you made the call last year to have Daniel Jones here. You have Drew Lock here. You have an undrafted guy in DeVito, who, you know, at this point, you know, it was much more of a fan favorite than he was a future, you know, solution at quarterback. You know, look, I think that's why they've done the homework. You know, give credit to Garofalo and Rappaport with the, you know, they had visits over the weekend with Bo Nix and Spencer Rattler. I mean, if Dable looks at, you know, Nix and says, look, I love this kid. We saw him at the Senior Bowl. He came in here. You know, I think that a year under our coaching that we can get him to be a, you know, a top 15 quarterback in this league, you know, maybe they look to use their early second round pick. Maybe have to move up a little bit. Maybe they like Rattler right there in the second round, or even, you know, moving up from their third round pick. I do think that there are guys, Shane made a comment a couple weeks ago, Greg, that you're going to get quarterbacks from all different places in this draft. And it was kind of interpreted like, you know, we know the top guys, but we may be looking for guys who might be developmental guys. You know, they have a guy in Daniel Jones who, money-wise, on the books, you know, they're not lying when they say they hope to start the season with him in week one, because they have an idea that they want to develop a quarterback a little bit, similar to the way the Giants did in 04 with Eli. But the reality is, it's just going to have to depend on how their board breaks and how aggressive they're going to be. They don't have 11 picks, as you mentioned. They can't just all of a sudden start throwing picks around and saying, you know what, we need to get this quarterback. And if they do, they better be right. Because if they're not right on the quarterback, especially if they get rid of assets to get a quarterback, they're going to be leave themselves short at other positions. And that is only going to hurt them on the field this year. And do you have ownership buy-in? Well, you know, I believe they do to a point, but if they go against what ownership wants and ownership says, you know what, we believe in you, but if it fails and fails miserably, then you got a problem.
Art Stapleton, thank you very much, sir. And check out all of Art's Giants coverage. The Record, there in North Jersey, northjersey.com. Of course, his podcast as well, if you want the latest on the Giants. All in with Art Stapleton. Thank you very much, good sir, and shout out to the Rockland Bergen Alliance.
You got it, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Art.
Thank you.
There he goes, Art Stapleton, and it just did make me think. First of all, they really are. The mood swings are set up for the Giants, because unless they make an aggressive move up the board, which I, you know, you never know, but they kind of are, they have to wait it out and they have to see what is presented in front of them. And it could lead to a new quarterback or Greg, like you said,
they could see how
maybe they move back, you know,
they could see what the Patriots would take. It really feels like that's a logical.
Yeah.
Partner but as a Giants to move fan, up.
You're it's the nerves are high because it's hard to really, you know, what's happening the first two picks, obviously, but then like how these teams, and it's funny, this is how the draft and this is how the sausage gets made. Your entire organization's future is kind of hinging on these other teams in front of you and decisions they make, unless you try to put it in your own hands and move up the board. But that's very costly. And on the Belichick thing, Mark?
That was the first question I like when I was writing down my curiosities for.
Well,
Art,
I just
come on, this makes too much sense.
I remember A Football Life, and then I just looked it up real quick. It was actually the series premiere of A Football Life, the NFL Films, NFL Network show, and it started with a two-parter on Belichick, and it always stuck in my mind when Belichick goes to Old Giant Stadium before they tore it down, and he's staring at the locker room, and he gets wistful and nostalgic, and he actually gets just emotional, choked up, talking about how important this building was and all the great memories and what it meant to him to be involved with those Giants teams, even if his relationship with Bill Parcells wasn't always so hot. So it would not, I would think he would be very interested in the situation. And then it becomes about the Maras and the Tishes, whether they are, and again, the good thing for Giants fans, you guys overall, like they have strong leadership. Like, are there reverse gears in their tank? Will they get sucked in by this, or will they look at it the way other people seem to be looking at Belichick as a depreciated asset at this age?
I think Belichick's Q rating is going to just continue to climb towards next offseason. I just do, because I think suddenly you're like, you're going to have teams that have, you know, Joe Fabietz at head coach. And it's like, wait a minute, we could have had or could have Belichick. And like, you've talked about the Belichick biographies and they're great, but the Parcells one too does an incredible job of describing how the Parcells-Belichick relationship came to be. And I think Belichick was one of the most famous coordinators of that era. When sometimes coordinators were hidden.
The
absolutely.
Most. Oh, the most.
Absolutely. Like, I mean, when he got the Cleveland job, like, right after winning that second Super Bowl with the Giants, like, I immediately bought in and was just fascinated by the concept of who he could be and what he was. And he did it in Cleveland. And then the team goes. But it's like, Belichick should not be an unattractive option. And I think if you're a Giants fan, and if you're the Giants media corps and Belichick comes back to the New York Giants, like, what else makes more sense poetically for the National Football League?
It's a fun little backdrop to this NFC East season. Because as Art points out, it all comes down to win losses. Like, I don't care who the quarterback is, what the scenario is, what happens. If the Giants win 9 games with Brian Daboll this year, they're not going to fire him. Like,
no.
But if they win six games, they might. You know, it's like, that's just how it works. And I think that's how it's going to work for the Cowboys, possibly the Eagles and the Giants. So it's these three teams, these big franchises, and apparently, you know, Belichick's kind of eyeing those three teams.
Yeah, I like football season and all the things that go with it.
And don't forget,
like the East Coast. And I think Giants fans might come out of draft day disappointed. We'll see. But I just
or
think,
they could be flying because the board fell the right way.
I think the most likely outcome is what I asked Art about, which is like, actually, Daniel Jones probably is going to be their quarterback, and they're going to try to do as much as they can. And they've had a good offseason. They got Brian Burns. They changed the offensive line, like, as much as they can to get high level talent around Daniel Jones, because the quarterback, it just doesn't fall right for them.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see.
And the assumption, even if they did get a quarterback, the assumption Daniel Jones is out of the building. No, he's a sunken cost for them. And if they choose to go the route of 2004, 20 years ago, where you had a veteran start and then a rookie come in, you might see Daniel Jones and a new guy.
You know, it's kind of sad though. You know what that means? And it sounds like they're
going
to take.
I know where you're going with
somewhere.
This. Yeah,
Tommy DeVito will be out of the building.
Oh, I thought you were saying Drew Locke. Yeah, because they have Locke in the building. Yeah,
he's guaranteed some money though.
Yeah,
I don't think Locke's going anywhere.
That would be
because DeVito doesn't work on like the Arizona Cardinals. Like, there's a miss. Right. We're not aligned there.
And as many people have told me. The other thing to remember about next January, when the cycle begins anew at coaching, Bill Belichick is spending this year learning how to be a head coach. And once he learns, like, how do you be successful in the NFL? He relearns that, like, his brain is firing off, the synapses, everything's working again. He'll be,
you
awesome.
Know what I like about this? So. It's like, this is very like Hulk Hogan, Macho Man, where like, after spending a decade of you kind of annoyed with Belichick and everything that he had produced, the fruits he'd produced, now you're like backing him unlike anyone else I know.
Well, I never not. I respected the man.
I don't doubt
that's where this is rooted.
He caused you a lot of
lot.
He caused you a lot of pain, and you're showing
and a lot of salt being rubbed in. Like, he loved rubbing the salt into the wounds of Jets fans and that.
Why you have that Clemson football over there?
That's I got it. Built that orphanage. It burned down to the ground. You can't disprove that, Greg. That's why you're so mad. You can't disprove that I flew down to the Clemson area and rebuilt an orphanage from ashes.
I'm starting to believe it.
Literally on the football, it says that the conference that you contributed to, that you have no idea what it was in Los Angeles and is like, you know, the future billionaires of America.
He has memorized the football.
Yeah, but here's the thing. See,
it's not that hard.
I think from another angle, Dan reached out to Clemson and
yes. How can I help?
Said, put something in Oculus on the football. Don't let them know what I actually did, because that... Don't let them know. Hide your good,
also, this
your
could
good
be
deeds
last
under.
Year's thank you football. Like, there's another one potentially coming.
As if you've stopped working for the Clemson area.
Yeah, the orphanage ball is coming. And by the way, get your hands off there. That's Dabo Sweeney's autograph on it.
Most valuable partner, Dan Hansis.
Thank you.
Does not know.
Can you show the camera?
Can't take that away.
Sure. I mean,
can we get a tight shot on that?
Here we go here. And I can't read it off the camera, so I'm going to turn around. It's thank you for aiding in the professional development of our Scholar athlete and providing a life-changing career experience during our 2023 Los Angeles Business Week trip. So I don't see Orphanage. I don't see Carolina. I mean, it's amazing to me as someone who won this prestigious Most Valuable Partner Award that you don't even know what freaking state it's in.
Can I have the ball?
And I'm happy that you helped the young Clemson students figure out how to take advantage of workers.
You're a big man about it, but I'm going to... I didn't actually give my acceptance speech of the football. Thank you to Clemson. Thank you to Dabo Sweeney. Thank you to the everyone that, needed me in a big spot, and I delivered. It says right here, Greg, a life-changing experience. And I've been involved with a few. So
I wouldn't normally bring this up, but I actually remember the day that the Clemson contingent came through the newsroom. It was one of those days where I was in the newsroom early, and I actually talked to three or four of them because they were asking about television and television production. And then right next to my cubicle, on the right side of my cubicle, glass walls, it says Dan Hansis, and I think they meant to send it to me. Because
Breaking news.
A bunch of them asking about how were setting up for an NFL Network show, and like a bunch of people.
Well, you deserve a football.
I'm just saying you do too, no doubt, because of your other tasks down in the Clemson area. But I would like to. I'm going to start my own.
According to some NFL media sources, very close to the situation, there is reporting that Mark Sessler is the man they actually meant to give the football to. I love
your attempts are
my attempts. This is the man who helps the kids.
It's just a remembrance.
I believe
it's
everything
just a remembrance.
Mark's
I'm not claiming that to be the case. I'm saying
it would explain something.
It is an unusual occurrence.
The one person who definitely doesn't get or deserve a ball is the guy that's crowing the most about it. So read into that.
Oh, I don't want to look. Look at the performance of the Clemson football team since you spoke to him.
Now you're hitting out. This is very on-brand, Greg. Clemson, you'll fight back, and you got great leadership at the top. Let's take a break, and when we return, Chad Reuter on the NFL Draft.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we push against typical societal norms. We embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. providing a space for raw, unfiltered conversations that celebrate vulnerability and allow you to tune in, to share, connect, and find comfort together.
Our tears come as a way to let us release what we can't hold anymore.
I trust that no one's ever going to find out those deepest, darkest secrets.
Yeah, it's been a hard day. She walks out, and this is what she looks like.
Oh my gosh, give her an Oscar!
Listen to A Really Good Cry with me, Radhi Devlukia, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back. So we just spoke with Art Stapleton, breaking down the Giants and a very interesting path they have next week's draft, where they pick, you know, all their different picks. What do they have, 6 or 7 picks, whatever. But then there are men like Chad Reuter for NFL Media. He's been with the company since 2011, who, when he drops his final mock draft, it will have every single pick. What is it, 260 this year? Where are we at?
What's 257.
257. That drops on Friday, and we're going to get a little sneak preview of it. So, Chad, welcome back to Around the NFL.
Thank you, gentlemen, for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here.
This draft class, you've been doing this since 2000 now. So what are your thoughts on this draft class? What do you give it a grade, the overall class?
It is a B-ish. There's some great positions, some not very deep positions. And it's fun when there's quarterbacks. Mm. Look, I love offensive linemen. That's my favorite position, and not just because I'm a big dude.
Part of it.
Yeah, well, absolutely. One time I was at a Packers training camp, and Larry Bechtel, their longtime offensive line coach, saw me on the sideline watching, and he looked at his guys and said, "Hey, you guys better do this because you got guys on the sidelines there who can step in for you and play." You know, so like,
so Ryder. I've been so Ryder in the stands.
Yeah,
the
absolutely, exactly. But no, when there's quarterbacks, it's just more fun, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun, a lot of intrigue, and so I'm really looking forward to it.
You're not messing around with the quarterbacks. The one of the picks that really stands out. I mean, first of all, your answer to the Giants question was they trade up to 4 and they take McCarthy, so they trade up with Arizona. And end up getting McCarthy. But the thing I wanted to start with was you had Minnesota sitting at 11, didn't get the trade up, and then they take Bo Nix.
Yeah.
That you would think that there could be that much appreciation for Bo Nix, and the two most logical teams in my mind would be the Vikings or the Broncos, right, that he could go that high?
Absolutely. If you look at Bo Nix, he is very much like Kirk Cousins. And if they want that similar type of guy, he's right there.
Although, but Kirk Cousins was like a 4th-round pick. You don't usually take those guys that early, but it would be a wild thing to take a guy like that.
And it's interesting. I remember because when Cousins got picked, I remember going back into the Culver, and we had kind of the debrief from the draft, right? We were sitting around in a room, and people were saying, why would Washington take RG3 and then take Kirk Cousins? And people were saying it. Yep. And I said, hey, Kirk Cousins was 2nd round value. Mm. They got him in the 4th round. It was a good move. And the room went silent. Like I, you know, just said something about somebody's parents, right, or something. So I think
what you're known to do, in fairness.
Well, yeah, look,
you'll bury a parent, you don't give a
shit. You do it once and then people think you do it all the time, right?
Yeah.
So he was viewed as a more than a 4th round pick. And I think just the demand for the position. Minnesota, look, Sam Darnold, really solid player. They cannot just roll out Darnold. So I think you put in Sam Darnold and a guy like Nix, and you know, they work together and get it done.
I think the Chargers fans would come out of this process absolutely thrilled if what you suggest happens, because they have Marvin Harrison falling to them, and all this business like, oh, the Chargers won't draft a wide receiver because they are going to only have like 200. No, that would be amazing. It's a need, and it's also the best player in the draft, arguably. But then I love this too, because I kind of just love organic fits where you love, no matter what you think of the player, he's going to be maximized where he goes. And Blake Corum, Michigan's running back, going to the Chargers, to Harbaugh in 2. I think that is like, I love draft things like that. And I think on the show, we talked about like stuff we wanted to see happen. I had that too. And so Do you think that Harbaugh is, like, no matter what, willing to go do that with the second round? Is he hoping that he just falls to him?
Yeah, oh, I would think so. And you know, he may not. A lot of people don't have Blake Corum as a top 40 pick, and
I mean, he's 5'8".
I understand that, but you know, the Chiefs took CEH at the end of the first round, also another 5'8" guy. I didn't like that pick, but I love Corum as a player. He does everything, pass protection. Like, he doesn't pass protect like a guy who's 5'8". I mean, he does everything. And coming off the knee injury a year ago, he wasn't even his most explosive self. And we've seen guys really turn it on after that year. So I think he'll be even more explosive than he was this year in the NFL if everything goes right. And I think Harbaugh, you know, was so effusive as praise of J.J. McCarthy. And I think he's going to feel the same about Corum. And honestly, like, if he doesn't pick Corum, he could end up going all the way down to the Ravens to play for John Harbaugh at the end of the second round. So those are the two spots for Corum.
Sometimes we, in this ramp up to the draft, start to fall in love with an idea or a thought, and then it turns very surfacey when you look back. Oh, it didn't play out that way at all. And that's what everyone seems to be doing with, oh, Harbaugh will definitely, I'm talking about Jim, will take an offensive lineman because he loves his dogs and he loves to run. But as you point out, going to get a playmaker and potentially a truly special one like Harrison to stretch the field, I mean, that helps the running game as well. So that checks out in a different way.
Exactly right. And don't forget that Harbaugh had to sit there and watch Marvin Harrison at Ohio, you know, beat him.
Yeah.
I mean, he had some pretty good games, and I think he knows the kind of special player he'll be getting.
I saw you put Neighbors at 13 falling all the way to the Raiders. I'm sensing, as we get closer to the draft, a lot more of the people in your neck of the woods, the draft Knicks, are projecting Neighbors to slip, that Odunze maybe goes ahead of Neighbors, and that maybe Neighbors isn't as big of like a top 5-6 lock as we thought maybe a week or two ago. Like, wait, where is that coming from? Info, just your film tape? Like, what's going on there?
So I think all I know is I've been doing this long enough where people think the top 10 guys are not going to end up being the top 10 picks. It's just, we know that. And Neighbors, there's no questions about Odunze. He is a solid player. He is Mike Williams for the Chargers for me. He's really just a solid player that you know what you're going to get. With Neighbors, I'm not sure. And he's so much like OBJ. He's so much like him. And OBJ went 12th. And those are the kind of things that I just look for. Hey, if Neighbors does not go top 6,
where does he?
This could be what happens. And you know, and the other thing is, I'm not going to project like 8 trades or anything, but if he starts falling down, obviously somebody might get in the mix there too for him. But
you projected a lot, though. It was spicy, and you always put like what the specific one is. You had the Colts trading up for Bowers.
Yeah.
And then you give the exact trade that it would be. It would be Bowers and a third in exchange for 15th overall, a second and a fourth. That's a lot for a tight end, but that would be fun for the Colts.
Yeah, you know, he's more than a tight end. I think he's the best player in this draft, regardless of position.
Woo!
And I won't be shocked. I honestly won't be shocked if the Chargers take him at 5, or if they can work out a trade with the Giants for that one spot to get that. I think he does everything. I think if you get a guy in the George Kittle to Travis Kelce realm, he's much more than just a tight end.
Yeah, I think the Chargers are meeting with him as we speak, or very, very soon to now. You have another trade, because I like looking at the two teams that don't have picks the in the first round, the Panthers and the Browns. The Panthers, you think, would be sitting there, we need players, but they trade the pick to the Raiders, who take, you have Michael Penix Jr. falling all the way to the 33rd pick. I think a lot of people feel like there's going to be this run on quarterbacks. You got the Broncos, the Raiders. In your world, one of them, they move up, but like,
someone's got to fall.
So you think this could happen. Penix goes all the way to round 2.
Look, last year, a lot of people thought Hendon Hooker and Will Levis were going to be first round picks, and they were not. Mm-hmm. And that happens. I mean, would I be surprised if the Raiders move up into the 32nd spot in the first round to get him? No, I wouldn't be surprised at that at all. But the Carolina does not have enough picks, and they need a lot of players. And the previous administration kind of left them bereft of draft capital. So they're going to be looking for a deal like this. And if they can find it, they're going to take advantage of it. And so I think this makes a lot of sense. And look, Michael Penix lost parts of 4 seasons at Indiana to injury. You don't see a guy like that going in the first round very often. If it was a one-off, that's fine. But you know, I think that's the thing. And with him, and he's really talented. I mean, he, if you put an offensive line around him, you give him the weapon, he's going to hit him, and he's a very talented thrower, but there's going to be questions about his knee and then shoulder. So
there, you have a trade, another trade in the first round. Both teams intrigue me. So you have the Rams and Chiefs doing business, and
yeah,
I love that you think it's very possible that that Les Snead goes to his dresser drawer and pulls out that F them picks t-shirt again.
Oh, absolutely.
And for another year to continue the streak that dates back to 2000 after 2016, will not have a first round pick. That's interesting to me. So, but let's start first with the Chiefs, who to me, this is the one that as a layman, I still feel like the thing I'm really confident about is the Chiefs make a charge up the board in the first round to get a wide receiver, especially now with the Rashee Rice situation, Travis Kelce, another year older, not a lot of depth in general. You have him moving up to the middle of the first round. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think Xavier Worthy out of Texas is a perfect fit for them. I know that they signed Hollywood Brown, but look, Worthy is very worthy of the
nailed it.
And he's an explosive player.
I wish you would just stand on your analysis right there, like go blank and wait for us to change the
exactly
subject.
Right. Yeah. Exactly okay, right. No, but look, he's not just the guy who ran a fast 40. I mean, that's obviously one of his strengths, but he can catch the ball in short areas and make people miss. He can get down the sideline. I don't think safeties in college understood how fast he was, because they would like try to get towards the sideline and then he'd be gone. And I think when you add that to the Chiefs offense, and
the Chiefs
won two Super Bowls, but like, you know, they were not happy with how things played out on offense, right? And that's the kind of difference maker that they'll go up and get. The other thing that I if you guys remember when the Lions went up to get Jameson Williams, they went from 32 to 12 to go get him. And if Brock Bowers gets into that area, I'm really curious to see if they would go get him, or even if they think of Worthy that highly.
That's where like fit is everything. Because right? I do think Worthy is more dynamic than people are giving him credit for as like a real player. Like he's a much smaller player than Kadarius Toney, but I think could do some of the things that they were hoping Kadarius Toney could have done. Not that they've totally given up on that. Like if he lands with a team like the Chiefs, then you can see him being like quite Zay Flowers like, but maybe with more speed, which is like, but if he ends up on the wrong team and then he winds up being a bust, I think that's an amazing fit. But I really do have to say, I found one of your picks ridiculous and just questionable. With pick 230,
thanks for coming on.
With 235,
okay,
you had the Seahawks taking tight end McCallum Castles.
Yeah.
Chad was drunk in Hermosa Beach when he
reach.
I know, yeah. Right?
For McCallum Castles to go top 235, you're going to get a lot of pushback, I feel like.
You know, look, you got to take chances with this. I can't be the same as everybody else who put Castles at 251.
Okay.
You know, I have to take some chances. And
it must
and
be a bizarre process at the end of this 7-round thing of just like,
yeah, what is happening at the end there? You're just kind of like...
Well, you've seen that.
It's probably deep team information that you're leaning on in the seventh.
You know, in Ted Lasso, when he's playing darts against the mean guy that I can't think of the name of. Look, you know, the play, you get your population of like 300 some guys that are in the mix, and you've got team needs. You've got workout. You've watched them for the past 3-4 years, and you try to make some interesting ads. And at that point, you're like, okay, what team needs two edge rushers? What team needs two cornerbacks? What, you know, and so where are these? And you just try to get as many guys. And then you look for the off the radar guys who weren't at the combine, like 30 guys who weren't at the combine will probably get picked. Wow. So you have to take all that into consideration.
Circling back, the idea of the Chiefs getting Bowers makes so much sense, both because, you know, think about that, the two tight end set there, but also Kelce at 33 with a year or two left. Yeah. You get to learn under Kelce in the building and then have a locked and loaded potential superstar to replace him. That there's just a lot of logic there. That checks out.
Yeah, I would love to see that kind of huge move. And, you know, I think to stay on top, you can't just do the status quo. You can't. And you have to make big moves. And they're so good at scouting later in the draft that they can afford to, you know, take some chances. And so, like, again, Xavier Worthy is not out of the conversation either at like that 11-12 area. If you remember, John Ross went like ninth
How'd that go?
And he was not nearly the prospect. That
right.
It's a great point that you make about everyone thinks they have the top 10, and it becomes very consensus-y where, like, there's so much agreement. And then it never happens that way. Like, even guys who are, now you look back and you're like, oh yeah, Drake London, of course he was the number 8 pick. It's like, no one had that.
No.
Absolutely no one had that. And he was like a very well-known prospect, like, but literally no one had that. And that happens all the time with these guys at the top. Fun mock. That one comes out when? On Friday?
On Friday.
One little note, Bills fans are not going to be happy at the 28th pick that they don't go wide receiver, they go defensive player, edge, Marshawn Nealand.
Yeah, and Brandon Bean's already come out and said, look, we're not reaching for a player. And I mean, I thought of a bunch of different ways of them moving up to get a guy, but they're not, they move up, but they only give up like a fourth round pick or something like that. If somebody falls into the early 20s, then maybe they go get him.
Someone will fall the 60. You had quite a few receivers falling that far. Roman Wilson,
right.
You have them taking Roman Wilson, Ricky Pearsall. You had A.D. Mitchell falling quite a ways, Troy Franklin. And if you just do the math,
yeah,
some of these guys that feel like they have a chance to be in the top 35, 40 at receiver are absolutely going to be there at the end of the second round.
Well, and teams, and I would drive the editors insane if I projected 6 second round trades, right? I mean, like, so they would go nuts. And but that's what happens. There's 5 or 6 trades. So a lot of the guys that I have at the end of the second round, teams will move up and go get. And the Bills are probably one of those teams that'll move one of their fourth round picks, move up and get one of the receivers they like. Kind of like Packers did that with Christian Watson a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And so I would expect that more than a first round move from them.
Chad Ryder, check him out, NFL.com. Where can they find you on, Mark? X.
On X.
Twitter. Great. Chad underscore
Mark. Mark insists that the owner gets his due. That's just a Mark thing, and I can't.
That is completely inaccurate, but we'll just let it go. Where can we find you?
Great. Phoenix Mellon is what I like to call him. I would Chad underscore R-E-U-T-E-R.
Right.
Yeah.
But don't call him Reuter.
I don't care.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you to Chad. Thank you to Art. Good name day, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Chad, we got an Art. Tomorrow, we get Daniel Jeremiah. Boom. Come back for more draft analysis with Move the Sticks on ATN. Until then, you know what you must do. Heed the call.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.